Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nintendo Pirate Radio.
Yar.
I'm your host. Well, not. I'm actually your host. I'm your intro specialist for this episode, Carl Castaneda. Your regular host, as usual, will be Mr. Jonathan Metz.
I'm being held hostage by these pirates.
Yeah. So we've also got a few other guys here. We've also got
Mike Sklens.
Stan. Yeah.
Wasn't pointed at you, buddy.
Fuck
you. Stan Ferguson.
And the other guy.
John Wren.
Okay, so let me just set up what's going on here, because I think for people who are current listeners of the show, who maybe haven't, you know, listened into the Bat Catalog, a lot of these voices...
The
Bat Catalog.
That's Batman Sears book.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I was thinking, like, his archives. Catalog is way more fun.
Yeah.
All right.
That's where he gets all his furniture.
Yeah.
Order by mail.
The Batalog.
Just gonna take a quick peek in the Bat Catalog. Nowhere else sells these carbon fiber couches.
It's basically an IKEA catalog, but everything is bat themed.
Yeah, or black.
It's all black. Yes.
And waterproof to be in the Bat.
And it has to have wings.
Yeah. So Nintendo.
So Nintendo Radio. Okay. So this is of the tradition.
Yes. But,
So basically, for those of you who don't remember it, because it was many years ago. Radio for Nintendo was started by Mike Sklens and Evan Birchfield, but about 8 episodes in, Stan Ferguson and myself.
By the way, I tried very hard to get Evan here this weekend. He just moved from New Mexico to Oregon, so
yeah.
He wasn't able to do it, but we tried very hard. It was going to be a surprise for all these guys.
It would have been a hell of a surprise.
Oh, wow, he's back in Oregon?
Yep.
Yes.
Moved to Portland.
Portland, Oregon. In any case, so after about 8 episodes, Stan and I decided to record a one-off episode of Radio Free Nintendo about video game journalism, and
which we botched pretty badly.
It wasn't a very good episode. You can go back and listen to yourself. And if you want to listen to what I sounded like at 16, you can go ahead and listen to that episode.
It wasn't very different.
No, it was fine.
Wasn't much different.
Yeah.
in any case, so
your voice has gotten higher, I think.
If anything, yeah. Anyway, so we passed it off to Mike, and he listened to it, and he seemed to like it, and Johnny seemed to like it. So it aired as Nintendo Pirate Radio, the theme being that we had tied up and sort of sent away Mike Sklens and Evan
theme
Birchfield.
Theme in air quotes.
Yeah, theme in heavy air quotes. Every once in a while, basically, Stan and I would come on the show and shit things up with a little feature topic.
Yeah.
And then sometime later, I think Johnny actually was on the second episode of Nintendo Pirate Radio to refute all the claims made on the first episode.
That sounds like something I would do.
Yes. So it was a very, very loose structure, usually something around a theme. We had whereas the early episodes of RFN were all about news and maybe covering new games that were coming out.
Yeah.
NPR, as it came to be known, was more about a feature topic. Later on, those things kind of gelled as one show.
We incorporated all that.
Into the general Radio for Nintendo.
I mean, we used to do Mike's Crazy Mailbag, which is listener mail.
Exactly.
You know? So, like, all these early things of RFN that were happening have all been incorporated in the show in some way over the years.
We were pioneers.
We originally called the first segment what we've been playing after one of yours, but eventually we decided to reformat it as New Business.
Which was your name.
Which was my name.
Yeah.
New Business.
And New Business is still a thing.
Still use that almost 7 years later, Carl.
Yes. So I'm very proud. My lasting contribution is the word New Business.
Yeah.
The word.
It's all spelled as one word.
Oh,
New Business.
Wasn't that the tagline on Crosstalk for a while?
No.
Yeah, new Business.
No, New Business is like basically the front page of Crosstalk.
Oh,
it's like
all
the newest stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
The Famicast uses New Business too. It's like New Bijinesu.
So anyway, so we since we're here in Boulder, Colorado for the weekend, we're recording a bunch of the Crosstalk podcast, which you can find at crosstalk.com.
Plug.
Johnny wanted us all to sit down and sort of play some games and then talk about it here on this week's episode.
And I wanted to give the RFN guys a week off.
Sure.
Before E3. I think they all appreciated that.
Oh,
so.
One last thing. If you don't know John Wren, because this is his first episode of Radio for Nintendo or anything on NintendoWorldReport.com. John is my old roommate from college and my current roommate, actually. And he's on several different podcasts on Crosstalk, including Rough Draft, Box Office Poison, and has been on a few episodes of DMP.
Right.
Isn't he the new Nintendo World Report sports editor?
That's a title that was invented for Stan and was flushed down the toilet by Stan.
Yeah, I think you were the first, last, and only sports editor
so,
on our site.
I like reviewed 2 sports games.
No, there was one other, actually. I think there was one other guy.
So having set the primer, I'll hand it off to Johnny, our actual host, and he can take it from here.
Sure. Well, thank you, Carl. It was great. Yeah, so this is going to be a shorter episode, just kind of more casual, you know. We don't have a whole lot planned out. It's obviously just a break from the normal, but hopefully people will enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first off, I thought, you know, the other than John, and John, you grew up with Nintendo stuff too, right?
I played a lot of N64.
There you go. Yeah. So we're all Nintendo fans here. Of course, Mike is still on Connectivity and edits that show, trading it off with Scott. So you probably have heard what Mike has been playing recently. But for these other three guys, this weekend was the first time any of them had even played a Wii U. And I wanted to start off by kind of asking you guys, what are your feelings about the system? Like, are you impressed? Are you confused? Is this something that is appealing to you, that's tempting you, or maybe one day you'd like to get one?
I mean, I know I'm going to get one. I mean, for me, most people who know me know that I'm a fiend for Wind Waker, and so the HD remake is something that I need, I crave, and I want at all times.
So that game is worth like $400?
For me,
sure. Okay.
And I also want it, when I get it, I'll also pick up Pikmin, which I also really want to play, and that kind of stuff. So for me, it's not a matter of not wanting it at all, it's I'm waiting for those couple of games that I really do want to play to pick up. And by that point, there have been a handful of Wii U games that I do want to try. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I'll have a nice little back catalog to go back to.
There's some good download stuff.
Exactly, actually. Yeah. There's plenty of stuff that I really want to play. So for me, it's a system that I know I'm going to get. I think playing it for the first time this weekend, one of the things that sticks out most to me is something that I was pretty much expecting, that really being impressed with the gamepad.
Mm.
And just that, you know, I've been a strong critic of Nintendo for using resistive touch on that screen instead of capacitive, and I think history will show that that was a really poor decision,
yep.
Especially since they're now trying to get a lot of iOS developers to port their games from iOS to the gamepad, which is going to be a nightmare because they use two different types of touch technology.
Right.
But that being said, I think the screen looks fantastic, and I think that the way it's incorporated, especially into games like Nintendo Land, is pretty genius. And so for me, I just think the way that obviously you would expect Nintendo Land, a launch game, that it really incorporates the gamepad to work well, but I think it, much like Wii Sports, it really shows the potential of remote plus gamepad, sort of interconnectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, to me, the biggest potential with the system.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you really like Nintendo Land?
I did. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Was that the one where I started whooping everyone's ass?
Yeah, yes, that was the one.
That is.
Yeah, I like that game. No, but Carl's right. I mean, I remember when playing like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, and you would have to be like, "Don't look at my fucking screen."
Right.
Like, get your eyes out of my corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely non-existent with the Wii U. And I thought that was really cool. And the fact that the screen is like just as nice as the TV.
Sure. Yeah, it's good. Like we didn't play it this weekend, but I've got Call of Duty Black Ops 2, and you can play two-player co-op in that game with one person on the TV using the whole TV and the other person using the gamepad.
Can you plug in headphones into the gamepad?
Yeah, you sure can. Awesome. And you can even play, I had TYP over a few months ago, and we played Versus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very much like what you're talking about in Perfect Dart, where, you know, so it's, although that creates this weird asymmetry, because the person on the gamepad can look up and see the TV.
Yeah.
But you could also send them in another room.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, how far is the range on it?
It's about 15 or 20 feet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my little apartment, it's, you know, far enough.
Yeah.
I can play the gamepad in my bedroom, so.
Wow.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. And in the bathroom.
Even better.
That reminds me of those Wavebird commercials from when it first came out, and they had the
mirrors
playing in the mirrors, like in the bathroom.
Yeah. That now you don't need the mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah. You just bring it with you.
Stan, Wii U, the mirror's in your pocket.
Stan, what did you think of the Wii U?
I thought it was nice, probably better with a group of friends, but since my long absence from this podcast, I kind of went into Xbox, PlayStation territory, and then I graduated completely to PC gamer. So
it's just that PC race, master race bullshit.
I have become part of the PC master race.
Yeah.
Graduated.
Yeah. Only the master race has to tinker with their machine every time they want to play a game.
But here's the thing.
It's that much better.
I love tinkering with my machine.
All right.
You know, that's what the kids call it these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't expect to get an X-Bone. I don't expect to get a PS4. I don't expect to get
a Wii U.
Just because I kind of like have everything consolidated on my computer. I use my TV just to watch Netflix now.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I really don't have that many local friends who aren't married and have the time to come over to my place and, you know, play games.
Yeah,
sure.
So it's just not a thing that I would actually use, much like my Wii. So since I didn't use my Wii, I'm not going to really use the Wii U either.
Yeah, I think for me, I think the reason I really put off buying a Wii U at launch, because, I mean, the thought occurred to me, and it seemed like they were in ready enough supply that you could just go in and pick one up after, you know, a few days after launch.
The day of launch, really.
Yeah.
On Wii U launch day, you will be able to walk into a store and just...
For those of you who don't know what John's referencing, we famously or infamously said that you would be able to get a Wii on launch day with no problems.
Yeah, and then
1 year later.
Yeah. And of course, I'm the one who still gets shit for that, because I'm the only one who said that who's still on the show. But we all agreed
that
would be the case.
Well, that was so the case with GameCube that we just expected that, you know.
Yeah.
History was on our side.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't think none of us really anticipated the supply constraints that they were.
Yeah, there was significant.
But the reason that I didn't go ahead and pick up Wii U at launch is that I did that with 3DS, and I played a few things on 3DS, but I really have not played that system very much in recent time, and so, and even though there are plenty of good games on there now.
Yeah, you're missing out. There's a lot of good games.
I mean, Luigi's Mansion, the Donkey Kong Country game that just came out. Fire Emblem. I mean, there's
a lot of great download stuff. Even much more than on Wii U. I mean, it's getting to the point where I'm downloading something on my 3DS almost every week now because there's so much good stuff coming out. And it's like, I can't even keep track. I can't even keep up with the digital releases
on
3DS.
Pushmo was one of my favorite games last year.
Yeah, well, you know there's a sequel.
Yes, I do know.
Crashmo. Have you played it?
I've played a little bit of it. I haven't really gotten into it yet.
It's quite different. It looks exactly the same, and it plays completely differently.
Yeah, that's a great game. Intelligent Systems, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good.
Does any of us just not like handheld games?
I have no use for them.
Yeah, here's ultimately the reason that I
don't think they're bad. I just don't ever see myself playing them.
Same here. The only one thing I play is on my phone, and that's Bejeweled Live Plus.
Yeah, I play, like, Scramble with friends.
Yeah. Something I can throw away.
Ultimately, the thing for me is that I don't really take my handheld out, like, to place when I leave.
Right.
And so, you know, when I'm out, when I'm on, like, the CTA or whatever, I'll be on my phone.
Sure.
Same with me, yeah. I'd rather just, like, listen to music or read a book on my phone or something. Yeah.
I listen to music, too, when I play games, but I think the thing with 3DS, and I know Mike understands this, because he and I are on the same page here, but 3DS, the Street Pass feature is meant to simultaneously... one of the main things it's for, I think, is to get you to take your system with you more often so that you will play it when you're out and about.
Yeah. It's a smart feature, for sure.
It's very smart, and I wish that...
It's being woefully underutilized.
Yeah, I wish that more games use it in a clever way that would allow you to, like, you know, send people your creative works. Actually, Freaky Forms is probably the best example, because you can pick up Freaky Forms stuff from people, and it's absolutely hilarious. But, of course, it takes too long to load up the game and go and access that stuff and look at it. But it's a great way to do it, because it's a creative game and you can just make all this crazy shit, you know, and send it to people.
But the reason I think that won't necessarily be the case with Wii U is that I do find myself craving a console experience every now and then. Mm. You know, because for me, it's a very different experience playing it on a handheld.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to be in different
kinds
of moods.
Wii U kind of blends the line, or blurs the line a little bit.
Wii U does a little bit. It's sort of, but I mean, you wouldn't take it on the run. Like, when you're sitting down to play a Wii U game, you're sitting down for a console experience.
But you can sit down in anywhere in your home.
Right. Correct. I mean, it's like, anywhere, it's like the size of a GameCube. Game
it's
like bigger than a GameCube.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's big, but it's... Like,
but it's not bigger than a tablet.
And it's actually, and very comfortable. Like, it's not, it's much like, you know, most Nintendo's controllers, very, very ergonomic.
Except the classic controller.
The OG, classic controller.
That one's white turd.
The Pro is great.
But sometimes I'll take the gamepad into my bedroom and, like, watch Parks and Recreation on Hulu and on my desktop computer while playing Super Metroid or something on the gamepad.
Right.
It's like, and I, you know, if I had Hulu Plus, I could even do that here. Mm-hmm. Just flip the TV to a different channel and watch it on PlayStation or something, but I don't have that.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot of flexibility. You can sort of mix and match experiences a lot because it does so many different things and it's portable in its own way.
I think, as the case for every Nintendo system after the Super Nintendo, it's very, very clear that they designed their console around a specific experience.
Would that have been with N64?
Around
Mario 64.
Mario 64. I mean,
really? The controller was built for that game.
Yeah, the analog stick exists.
So. And that's one of the weirdest controllers.
It is, but you know what? Here's the thing, though. For games that it's clearly been...
Oh, yeah,
It works so well.
Yeah, I never thought about how weird it was when I was playing
it's really comfortable.
Right. Yeah. Not to mention Ocarina of Time with the Z button lock on. Mm-hmm. That was
I'm just talking about, like, the third stick with the C button. Because I've seen people hold it from the outside and put their thumb all the way over.
Oh, I remember when I first got it, I actually did the same thing. I held it from the side. Click the Z button with both middle fingers and then use one of my thumbs for the analog stick.
That's weird.
I mean, obviously after using that for 2 seconds, you're like, oh, well, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you learn to switch over. But, yeah, the N64 controller is one, definitely one of those weird cases.
I mean, and I always thought the GameCube controller was incredibly comfortable, but yeah. I just never got used to the button
layout. It's the best, it's almost the best controller ever made.
I loved the GameCube
controller. Except the buttons would stick constantly.
The button layout is just really
It's awful. I thought, yeah, I thought the button layout was really weird, and they have the two, like, really fat triggers, and then the one little,
I love those triggers.
The one little Z.
Oh, the click.
Yeah, the, well, like,
no, the little Z button, right there. It's dumb that there's no that was Z weird. Button on the left side.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But, and the thing is, though, is that from an actual, like, comfort level of holding
comfort,
it,
it's,
the
I don't
casing
know
is the best one I've ever used.
Right.
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, actually like the bean buttons.
The kidney beans?
Giant button.
I thought they were okay. I always felt the B button was a real piece
the
of
C
junk.
Stick yeah. felt kind
the
of
The B button would get
janky.
Squishy all the time.
The camera stick was okay. It just was clearly designed to be a camera stick and not a second.
Yeah, when
stick.
People would use it that way,
the
I was
the
just
fact
like,
that there was a launch game called Luigi's Mansion that had you use it as a, you know, a dual joystick scheme, it's really didn't work all that great for it.
Right. Although, I gotta say, never hurt at all in TimeSplitters.
You know? What?
In TimeSplitters, that C-stick worked perfectly. Hmm. Like,
was that just for movement?
Your thumb just kind of sticks right on top of it.
Yeah. Anyway. So clearly, again, though, the game controller was designed for, I guess, for me, I always thought, that's why I think Wind Waker has the best controls of any Zelda game. Like, that controller just works so perfectly for it.
Yeah.
Because you're using the C-stick as the actual
camera
stick. I beat
Twilight Princess on a GameCube controller.
I mean, it was designed for the GameCube. Like,
yeah.
Those Wii controls are clearly an afterthought.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, maybe it's because I haven't been following it as well, but Wii U didn't feel like a console launch to me. Like, it didn't feel like as big of a deal.
I think that's more of a case of just the general state of the industry when it comes to console stuff.
But PS4 and Xbox are, like, huge.
That's the thing. They're coming out at the same year.
That's part
of the problem. Wii U came out in
after
isolation.
Everything else, and now before. Like, Wii came out after, and then Wii's coming
out
before.
And Nintendo did not have a great message, you know? Mm. They didn't... It wasn't something that was very buzzworthy at the time, and...
Because all I thought was that now it's just an HD Wii
with
a new controller.
Yeah, they didn't really do a great job to differentiate the U from the original Wii.
No, it sounds like an upgrade of the Wii. It doesn't sound like a totally different system.
And, I mean, when we first started talking about this, it was actually before Nintendo announced it, but we were kind of talking about what the new console is going to be like. To me, the single most exciting thing was all these great Nintendo franchises now be in HD.
Mm-hmm.
That still hasn't happened. The system's been out for more than 6 months.
Yeah.
There's still not a single...
Mainline franchise.
Right.
Yeah. Not even Pikmin. That's kind of like a lower
even
tier
Pikmin,
one.
Yeah, even Pikmin's not out yet.
Yeah.
Is there any talk about a new actual Mario?
The new Mario, it's supposed to be out by the end of this year. We haven't seen it. New Zelda is eventually coming out. Like, these things could... These might blow people's minds. Like, this might be the thing that really sells people. Like, holy shit, I gotta get that new Mario, dude.
Right.
Look at that shit. It's in HD.
You know what?
But they haven't shown it
yet. Here's why, dude. It's because of the success of Wii Sports.
Mm.
It's because they think they can survive on a game that is more of a concept demo than an actual game.
Well, I mean, they did.
That's why, though. Because
like, can you blame them?
Wii Sports was such a fluke. It's a great game, but it's just a fluke.
But at the same time,
Wii
they
Sports
looked at
Resort
that.
Was huge.
It did well.
It wasn't Wii Sports 2.
Yeah.
It wasn't packaged, eventually.
But in any case, I think that tells Nintendo, like, okay, we don't necessarily need a mainline franchise. We just need something that is a good demonstration for the console.
But you don't.
Yeah, you don't.
You need that franchise.
You need that franchise. I mean,
well, and they tried to have it both ways, right?
Sure.
So, you know, their concept demo here is Nintendo Land, which has all these franchises in it.
Yeah.
But not in the satisfying way that.
But how much
more like Mario Party?
Yeah, it's like the Mario game in Nintendo Land doesn't feel like Mario.
Exactly,
you know, it's not going to scratch that itch.
I mean, how much more hype would it have had if it had launched with a new Metroid game,
right?
Or a new Smash Brothers?
If it launched with a new Mario game, that would have
you know,
yeah.
yeah, exactly. Like,
well, it did. It was new Super Mario Brothers U,
isn't that like that came out on DS?
Super Mario Bros. 2, different game.
It's a different game, and it does look fantastic.
But it's not a main Mario.
It's a 2D Mario game. It's not a great showcase for the graphics power of the system.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of game that we've just had a little bit too much of in the past few years.
Yeah. How many of the new Super Mario Bros. Games have we had now?
Four.
Four?
Four. Two came out last year.
Four and two in 1 year.
Like, for someone who's not a huge Nintendo guy,
that seems like too much, right?
Well, it seems like they just remake the games over and over. And I know they do different things. Like, Mario Galaxy was cool because it was totally different.
Yeah.
But, like, every Zelda game seems, like, pretty damn similar, except for maybe a difference in art style. I never really got into Metroid. Like,
Well, I'll
see, I have no reason to buy a Wii U because, like, I don't really think that they have any great original IPs.
Well, and they haven't shown them yet.
Yeah. Right.
So we'll
and
see.
And when they do, it seems like they don't get pushed enough. Because yeah, they're just like, well, yeah, enjoy that, but, you know, save for the Mario.
Yeah.
Like,
we'll see. I mean,
well,
in a couple weeks.
The same issue.
In a couple weeks, yeah, we got E3, and,
it could change everything.
It could. It could totally change the whole feeling.
Was there any developer, like third-party developer for Wii that really utilized it beautifully?
Yeah, there were a few. I thought EA's Boom Blocks was absolutely
fantastic. Yeah,
we might go
was
play that,
that Spielberg
later.
One?
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Spielberg.
It was
well, I just, dude, actually, no, I interviewed Lewis Castle, who was the EP on Boom Blocks. He said Spielberg was in there weekly.
Yeah. Wow.
Playing with them and like giving them notes. Like, yeah, he was apparently very, very hands on the original Boom
Blocks.
That's weird.
Weird,
because it's like there's no basically no story in the game, and you think if you were going to bring Spielberg in, that's what you'd bring him in
it's,
for.
And it's weird though. Like, he talked about it, and he was basically like, yeah, Spielberg was just very, very conscious of the types of experiences that people have while they're playing it. And so he wouldn't necessarily play the game, but he would watch people play it and say, how do we get them to have this experience? Hmm. And then Lewis Castle and his team as the actual game designer.
Oh,
would
so
say,
he would like guide the design.
Yeah,
he's more of a director.
More of a director saying, you know, it's like, instead of the performances of the actors, he's trying to like elicit a performance from the people who are playing the game. And
yeah,
so
cool,
they were sort of responsible for taking his like abstract notes and turning it into something that's like concrete gameplay.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is probably the worst way to design a game, but
it
worked for that one. I mean,
Boom Blocks is brilliant. I mean, it's super fun. It's really clever use of the technology.
Yeah.
And it gives you something that would be very hard to replicate on any other system. It uses the controller in a way that feels natural and smart and unique to that system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do it, you feel like the way you use the controller actually has an effect on the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just to sort of mimic some natural motion or anything like that.
I will say it. I think for all you EA haters who are, you know, saying no great loss.
Mm-hmm.
EA to me made the best Wii game and the best use of the Wii
which
controller.
Is
Boom Blocks.
Which is Boom Blocks.
I loved Boom Blocks.
I gotta say, I think there's a great Boom Blocks game to be made on Wii U.
I agree.
Just because if you had sort of like a sort of controlling person on the gamepad or doing something with the scenario or the,
right,
or the environment, and then everyone else reacting to that environment with the remotes, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Well, Boom Blocks is, because it's so physics based and it's so, the rules are very flexible. So you have all these different modes and the rules can change very easily. And it still feels like you're playing Boom Blocks, even though you have these totally different kinds of games inside of it. To me, it's kind of like Mario and Donkey Kong. It's it's a franchise that they could continue to just iterate and just turn it into like completely different games every time. You keep the same kind of character style, the same sort of music, and the same sort of graphics. But you could just keep generating totally different experiences.
Yeah.
And they could be very multiplayer focused or very single player focused or a lot of online stuff.
Sure,
Boomblox did a lot of great online stuff.
There's probably a great level editor to be made with Boomblox that you could then send out and share. I mean, there's so much
that
you can do
that
there.
That was already a big part of the game.
Yeah.
So I think on the gamepad, it would be a lot easier to use that stuff.
Yeah.
And
so I have a question. How is Wii U's online experience?
It's way better.
Well, it doesn't seem like
it's fairly
it
non-existent like, still, though. I mean, I haven't played any games that go online.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it seemed like Wii's was pretty shit.
We
were like friend codes.
There are no friend codes anymore.
Well, all right, that's just like bringing us back to okay.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you're right. But, you know, the Miiverse stuff is really good. So it gives you a way to kind of share thoughts and messages and artwork with your friends and also to the public, you know, and people can kind
when
of.
When we were playing Sonic,
it.
I just saw like just things pop up all the time.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's fine.
But in terms of the online infrastructure, it works really well. And there aren't, the main problem is there aren't many games out yet that use online. It's none from Nintendo.
Can I tell
naturally,
you? For me, it is a crime that they're not working on a new Pokemon Snap. Because
with the sharing pictures and everything.
With the sharing pictures and being able to use the gamepad as a camera.
Right,
imagine
right.
if you brought the.
How do you know they're not working on it, Carl? We're 2 weeks out from E3.
Honestly, that should have been
I'll
launch title.
That's a system seller for me.
Yeah.
I would buy a
Pokemon
system for Snap.
I mean,
Snap.
It's got Pokemon in the name. It would sell. Like,
I love Pokemon
so
Snap.
It's a good game.
Dude, you raise the gamepad up, you take a picture, you share it. It already has the social features built in.
You
could
do that with Fatal Frame, too.
Yeah, you could.
Ghost camera games.
Yeah,
so I think that stuff is coming eventually.
I hope so,
but
it seems like a no-brainer. Like,
yeah.
But then again, that doesn't necessarily mean that Nintendo's working on it, right?
Man, does Nintendo just not believe online is viable at all?
They're not into it. You know, the traditional.
Is that a Japanese thing?
Well, it's partly Japanese. It's partly that they don't have any experience doing it. They don't feel that they can do it very competently.
Well,
I think that's all got a lot to do with it.
I mean, there are definitely a handful of franchises that are huge online in Japan, like Monster Hunter is really big in Japan.
No,
like,
but not online.
Is it though?
The game is, some versions of it are online in Japan,
yeah,
but that's not predominantly people play it locally over wireless on their handhelds, on their PSPs.
Wiis and their 3DSs.
Oh, like an ad hoc network?
Yep.
Okay, interesting.
Which is just, that's not going to happen in America.
No, you can't. No, yeah.
And you can just replace that with an online mode, but then it's a different experience.
Different problems.
So, but, I mean, there's a Monster Hunter now on Wii U that is online, and everybody says, Billy was talking about it last week, everybody says the online just works great.
Yeah.
He has voice chat that built, there's a microphone built in the gamepad, so you don't even need to plug, you can plug
the
in.
The thing is set
you
up to do everything you would want it to do.
You can plug in a headset,
You can plug in a pair of like iPhone headphones, and it uses the microphone built in.
It's very smart.
Or the
really
Xbox
headset. And you know, it tells you which of your friends are online, what they're playing. It makes it very easy to match up with them. You know, it all works really well, and you still can play. You know, you can walk around the gamepad and play it that way. So
I mean, as a huge Nintendo fan, is that kind of shit really frustrating for you? Just like
in what way?
I mean, if you want like a more full bodied online experience, you could just turn on your Xbox and PS3. But like. Why
or PC.
Can't you get that?
I couldn't,
or PC.
I couldn't turn on my Xbox because I don't pay for gold anymore.
Oh, well, all right. You can turn on your PS3.
Yeah. I could use my PS3. But frankly, for me, I don't play many online games.
Neither do I. I'm
not
know
that
some
interested.
Care about this.
Yeah.
I would love, and I think if any company could make an online game that would make me really obsessed and want to play it online all the time, it would be Nintendo.
Mm.
They haven't done it. Maybe they'll do it one day.
Man,
I don't know.
They made like a 3D Pokemon?
Dude, you're the millionth person to come up with that idea.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's,
well, they're making a 3D Pokemon.
A 3D Pokemon, like an MMO.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
That'd be pretty rad.
That's a whole other can of worms, though, man. There's a lot of stuff that goes along with making an MMO that I think Nintendo's not up to.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Like, the customer service alone is a huge undertaking, and, like, the fact that you... Now, because Nintendo's so overprotective of the sanctity of children that, like, making an MMO is just like a nightmare situation.
Especially an MMO out of a kids game.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people play Pokemon, but it's a kids game.
Just, like, name yourself, like, you know, 10 Dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're supposed to be 13 to go online, and, you know.
It's a can of worms for them.
It's true.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I would be on that game day one.
Oh, yeah, I think they'd get a ton of players just from, you know, the above 13 crowd.
I played the hell out of Mario Kart DS online.
Sure.
That was
Oh, dude, fantastic. Mario Kart DS is my favorite Mario Kart.
Mario Kart Wii has really good online play on Wii. It's probably the single best online Wii game.
Yeah.
Just great integration.
Very solid.
It works very, very well. And then Mario Kart 7 is online too, but I don't know, on 3DS.
I got burned out on it.
Yeah, I just feel like, so man, this is too much like every other Mario Kart. Well, like, they need to reboot that franchise.
Well, you know what? For me, it was what made 7 not that interesting is that I put hundreds of hours into Mario Kart DS.
Yeah.
And what made DS work really well is that it wasn't necessarily that it had one big gimmick. It was just basically a greatest hits of the other Mario Karts done really, really
solidly.
But
you can only do that once, right?
You can only do it once. And that's what 7 was again.
Yeah, 7 was, basically
the same
thing.
I agree.
And so it's just
too much rehashing of other stuff.
Yeah.
And
oh, but you can glide now.
Yeah.
Which I like those new...
Those,
they're okay.
They're great.
Yeah. I like the underwater and the gliding stuff, but it doesn't make the game feel very different.
I would just love to have the double dash mechanic back and make that online. Like,
I agree.
That would be
amazing. Double dash your favorite Mario Kart?
It's not my favorite, but it's a very, very... It's
my favorite.
No, your favorite Mario Kart is Crash Team Racing.
That's true. But no, because the thing is, like, now that just makes so much sense. Like, they've always integrated past mechanics from other Mario Karts, but for whatever reason, double dash just got left by the wayside.
Yeah.
They've never picked that back up, which seems crazy to me because the infrastructure that now exists seems optimal for it. You could even do it on with the Wii U, where the back guy's got the gamepad, and the front guy's got the...
And the new Mario Kart is supposed to be shown at E3, so
like,
we'll see.
That seems
Mario
like
Kart
no-brainer.
Levels usually based off of Mario games?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, haven't we had in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, actually over... last 10 years, more Mario Kart games than actual
Mario games?
Mario
depends
games.
How you define them, I guess. If you define
I'm talking
news,
about, like,
you can't race on a
Mario Galaxy.
Level.
Yeah.
Again.
I would... You know what? There's a way to do that. That would be really cool if there was like this one 2D side-scrolling Mario Kart.
I mean,
one
of those crazy Smash obviously, they were, a lot of the levels are based on the 2D levels, but have the 2D games really added so much more new...
Well, that
you could create a really cool and interesting
like,
Mario Kart level.
Right.
Just rather
seems like
than just playing fucking Rainbow Road and Bowser's Castle over and over.
I think part of the original appeal of Mario Kart was that Mario was a 2D franchise up to that point. Now we can explore these same places, but now in 3D.
Right.
And I think that continued up through the Mario Kart series up to a point, but at this point, most Mario games are 3D, or at least they... It feels like you have a better sense of the world, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know that you gain very much by putting it into 3D.
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't think that Mario Kart as a franchise is very much influenced by the Mario franchise.
No,
it's its own thing.
Well, there were some Wii Sports themed levels in 7.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, same with Mario Party.
Yeah, which is gone now. I mean,
but I mean, it became its own thing.
Mario Party is not gone. There's one coming out on 3DS.
Really? I thought that 8 was the last one.
No, 9's already. There's already a 9.
Nine was the most recent one. I wouldn't call it the last one.
Huh. There's one coming out for 3DS.
Yeah.
Right. I think you can just stop caring.
Yeah, I stopped giving shit about Mario Party, I guess.
We had a good discussion about the Wii U and the current state of Nintendo and everything. Mm-hmm. And, so I wanted to move on to some games we've been playing.
Yeah.
So one of my goals, I've actually been wanting to do this for a long time, is to get a bunch of friends over and just raid my virtual console. Mm-hmm. Or more specifically my SD card channel.
The fridge, if you will.
The fridge. Raid the fridge. Because, I have about 75, 80 games on my SD card for Wii, mm-hmm. which are now on my Wii U, of course, but you can still access them. And a lot of them, you know, I played for a couple days when I bought them, and then I never touched them again. Some of them I played a lot, but then that was like 5 or 6 years ago now, and I just have never gone back to it. Mm-hmm. And I always think, man, I have so many games here. I don't play them. Mm-hmm. I want an excuse to go back and just dig through them. And I thought, this is perfect. So what I did was we booted up the Wii mode and went into SD card channel. And I said, guys, why don't we just take turns picking games?
Yeah.
10-minute time limit.
Sure.
So every 10 minutes, we're switching off to a new game. So I've got a long list of games here that we play. And a lot of these are games you guys had never heard of before. Or maybe you've been curious about them, but you never had a chance to play them. Mm-hmm. And then when I get to pick, usually I would play something I just wanted to show you guys because I thought it was cool, or it's a game that I hadn't played in a long time and I just felt like kind of booting up and seeing, do I still like it? Mm-hmm. So we have a long list here that we can refer to, but it started off with, I think, Stan, was it you who was playing Mega Man 10?
No, it was me.
It was you.
Yeah.
Mike, so...
Fucking Mega Man 10 is hard as shit.
You know, that's a game... I mean, I love Mega Man 9. It was the most exciting announcement ever that they're making a new Mega Man for WiiWare, right? And I played the crap out of Mega Man 9. And then 10 came out. I was like, wow, I can't believe they're still doing this. They're going to keep doing it. And then everybody was all of a sudden, you know, like, oh, they're going to do Mega Man X9 or whatever.
Yeah.
Which they haven't. But Mega Man 10 is a game I feel like I played for like a week. I was frustrated with it. It was hard. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I ever finished it. So I was so glad to see you.
Yeah, I didn't get anywhere near finishing it. I think I tried to have 4 of the Robot Master levels. I couldn't get to the boss on any of them. Yeah. With either Proto Man or Mega Man. And Proto Man has a charge shot, which makes him a little easier to play with.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't fucking do it. It's incredibly difficult.
Do you think it's harder than other Mega Man games?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't beat 9 either. I bought 9, though, and I got like decently far, maybe halfway through it.
Which one was the easiest? Was it 3 that was a little bit easier?
No. I wouldn't. We just did 3 on Retroactive.
Okay. 2 is pretty easy.
I would not say it's easy. 2 is pretty easy with the Metal Blade.
Yeah, with the Metal Blade. Yeah, always go after Metal Man first.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I put the hell out of Mega Man 9. I really liked a lot on Wii. I think that was actually
I got it on PlayStation.
It was one of those Wii. I think it's in the top 5 as far as Wii games that I've played the most.
Wow.
I really, really dug that game a lot. But
you never attempted by 10?
No, because I feel like I got my fill. It's the same thing again. I got my fill of that sort of, because, you know, I hadn't played a Sasquatch Mega Man game in so many years.
Right.
And it was a style of game that, like, I hadn't played in a really long time. And so after that, when I heard about Tekken, I was like, all right, that's great for people who want more of that. I feel satisfied with 9. Like,
yeah, that's how I felt. I felt 9 was so hard, and I heard that 10 was even harder, so.
Yeah, it's like, nope. You know what? I'd love to see another Mega Man game, though. What was it? Powered Up? The PSP game?
Yeah.
I'd love to get another one of those.
I'd like another Mega Man Soccer. I loved Mega Man Soccer. That game was good. I loved it.
Was there ever a Mega Man pinball game? I feel like there was a bit.
But yeah, Mega Man 10 was really hard. The music's great. The graphics are great. I mean, it's a really good game. It's got some interesting stuff going on.
Sure.
It's got an easy mode, which I did not try out because I didn't feel like that was the right thing to do.
Sure.
But maybe I should have.
Stan, tell me about Ninja Gaiden 3.
Ninja Gaiden 3 was awesome. I mean, I don't know.
Have you played a lot of Ninja Gaiden games?
I haven't played Ninja Gaiden since.
And by the way, we're talking about Ninja Gaiden 3 on NES, not Razor's Edge for Wii U.
I played the first Ninja Gaiden back when I was little, and that was the last time I played any Ninja Gaiden game.
Okay.
And it wasn't necessarily because I found them particularly hard. All games were pretty much hard in the 80s. They were meant for arcades.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for it. I actually preferred the NES game Strider.
Was it a Genesis game?
Well, it was also a Genesis game, but they were very different.
I've got the NES version's a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah.
It's not as technically impressive, but it's very different, yeah.
But that was a lot of fun, and it was kind of more along the lines of Ninja Gaiden. But honestly, I don't want to say I grew out of it. I'm just not really into 2D side scrollers anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
You just didn't push any buttons for you. Yeah.
No.
But
no.
You love those cutscenes.
The cutscenes were amazing. You know, especially the voice actor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very early video game storytelling. you know, so a lot of, what's it called?
Text?
No, a lot of, what's it called? The
letterboxing?
Letterboxing, yeah. And so, but I mean, you know, it's, for an NES game, I guess it's very cinematic.
Yeah. It was super cinematic. It was actually really, really cool. Yeah. That's one of the things we all loved, when we were kids about the Ninja Gaiden games was the head moving from left to right, you know, with the background.
See, that's animated.
See,
awesome.
If I'm going to go back to a Ninja game from years gone by, I'm going to go to Ninja Spirit.
Ooh. You didn't pull that? I have
that was on there.
I played a bunch of it. Like, yeah, I can talk about that without having to play it again. When that came out on Virtual Console, I played that a lot.
Really?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You're a fan.
I like Ninja Spirit.
We did retroactive on it. And
it gets hard. It gets real, real hard.
That game has a bad reputation. A lot of people felt it was not a good retroactive game, but
I liked it a lot.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
What about Shinobi?
You jump so high in that game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Shinobi on PS2 was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was hard. I love Shinobi on PS2. Oh,
I just remember playing that in the arcade. Then you get to the ninja throwing star levels that were first person. It was like, oh, this is cool.
So, John, you had a 1-2 punch this morning on Virtual Console. You started with Pulseman. Or Pulseman, Attorney at Law.
Yeah, Pulseman.
Saul Pulseman.
Saul Pulseman. Saul Pulseman's quality coach inmates.
So you played that for all 3 minutes.
I was going to say, like, you booted up Pulseman, and I was like, oh, this is a game made by the Pokemon dudes. And then I walked out of the room for a minute, and I came back, and you were not playing it anymore.
Yeah, I guess it's a side-scroller, but instead of scrolling side-to-side, you're limited by the edges of the screen, and you just go down.
I guess.
And the only way, you kind of sit there, and then this vector graphics hand just comes down and kind of just pushes.
Yeah, like the hand.
And destroys a couple layers of blocks, so you get in that hole, because you're like, oh, I guess I gotta go down now. And then it just does it again and hurts you. And you're like, well, shit. So I kind of figured, I realized I gotta get to the bottom. And after I died once and tried it again and got to the bottom, I was, fuck that game. Like, it was so pointless.
I think you probably booted into my save point.
Maybe.
Which was it said World 1-1.
No, yeah, I thought really? I started.
Yeah,
it just
started a new
one.
Game.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Because that game definitely has side scrolling parts, too.
Okay,
because
this just seemed like a weird example of. I mean, I understand that older games, you know, a lot of times didn't have tutorials or semblance of a story. Ooh. They were just like, attack this. And like,
although, I think
they didn't give me anything.
I think there's a very interesting through line between that game and Drill Dozer.
Yes. I agree.
A much later Game Freak game.
You can see some similarities.
Yeah.
Oh my
god,
Game Freaks. That's the name of them.
Yeah.
I remember that booting up my Nintendo or Game Boy Pocket.
Yeah. Because, again, it's about breaking through barriers and sort of tunneling through, which is a very interesting.
I don't think Pulseman is really about that. I think
but
that's just that
it's
one.
It's incorporated,
level.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, whatever that
from
was.
From the 10 minutes of it that
it.
I saw,
sure.
It seemed like that played a part.
10 minutes?
Much less, because with the remainder of your time, you flip to Cybertron.
Yeah, Cybertron.
Now that has a great cutscene.
It's a Konami Super Nintendo game where you control this big mech.
That was pretty cool. The controls were a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But once I got a hang of it, I was getting shot a lot. Like, they give you a lot of health in that game.
Yeah.
Because I was getting the shit kicked out of me, but I managed to beat a lot of it. It's the first level. I don't know. I didn't devote that much time to it. I like Sam, I'm not really into 2D side-scrolling shooters anymore. It feels way too antiquated for me. I know that it is, but that kind of stuff just doesn't light my fire.
Sure.
Yeah.
I couldn't see myself spending a lot of money on a virtual console. Especially if I just spent a bunch of money on, like, a console because it's, like, HD and shit.
You couldn't see yourself spending $300 to $500 on 70 to 80 virtual console games?
Is that what you
did? I didn't want to think about what I've spent on virtual consoles.
Oh, I get that way when I think about how many Rock Band songs I have.
Yeah. That's pretty scary.
You probably dumped about $1,000 into Rock Band.
Well, some of them are bundle prices. So, but I've dropped a couple $100 into Rock Band for sure.
Wow. Easily.
Yeah. Well, when you count like the instruments and all that crap.
Just the DLC.
Yeah.
Just the DLC. I dropped a couple $100 into Rock Band.
Man. Nice.
So, Carl, what was one of the favorite games that you booted up?
A few, really.
You had some Muscle March action.
I did Muscle March. Yeah. Mike and I played Muscle March.
I'll put
you failed at Muscle March. I played it.
Wow.
I did pretty well. Yeah.
Muscle March shit talking.
Well, he was sitting.
Damn.
He was sitting.
Like, he was sitting.
I innovated. I stood up, made it a lot easier.
And I went first. You were able to see sort of like the general mechanics before you had to start.
I figured that general mechanic out like 2 seconds into the game.
I can't say how the game plays, but it's hell of a lot of fun to watch.
It is probably more fun to watch than it is to play. Yeah. And it was great with having a whole group of us in the room.
Because like, we could point out all the crazy things in the background.
One person's playing it is really focused on moving your arms up or down in the right configuration. Everyone else is watching all the crazy shit on the sides of the screen, and it's so much fun.
It's like horses and office buildings.
Yeah. There's a guy riding a horse just randomly, and it's all like 2D pixelated graphics.
Yeah, they're so shitty. The graphics suck so much.
No, they're beautiful. I thought they were perfect, it's such a deliberate style.
And they don't even move. They just shake them.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
There are no sprites in the background. They're all just like textures. Like they're just there's like texture map people that are just in the background.
They're just like, photos, like Mortal Kombat style.
They're like static images. Yeah. Like
so fine with me.
I think it looks great.
It's part of the bizarre shit. Yeah.
It's that game's hilarious. Yeah. So I really liked.
I had a lot of fun playing it.
The reason I have that game is because an RFN fan, when it came out, thought it was so funny that he bought 4 copies of us for the crew and wanted us all to play it the next week, and we did. So that's why I have Muscle March.
It was very interesting. Another Virtual Console game that I played was I played F-Zero X.
Yeah, yeah.
The N64 game, which
gave Stan a seizure.
Well, when Mike was playing it, because
he vomit.
Well, I was on Death Race.
Yeah,
on Death Race.
That game's 60 frames per second, so I was surprised that Stan had a visceral reaction.
I think it didn't have to do with the frame rate. It was just
the camera's constant.
Him moving left and right, and then just the camera movement.
The camera swings with it.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh god, yeah.
Because even though it's a racing, even though it's a 3D racing game, you're very much from a top down. Not even top down, but like you're sort of at an elevated angle, and so you're seeing much more of the things moving at once than you would in a general racing game where you're maybe more...
It's true.
Your camera's placed lower on the ground.
Well, it's weird because like the track stays still, but the background swings when the movie.
Exactly. Right. It's weird.
And I didn't have the problem when I was playing F-Zero, the SNES version.
Sure.
That was fine, but of course that's totally different.
That's a Mode 7 game, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the Mode 7 game.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, F-Zero X is as fun as I remember, not as blisteringly difficult as GX is. I lost against Johnny when we were both playing, but
I didn't win the race, but I finished ahead of you.
Yeah, it was, that's a fun game. I have it on my own virtual console. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I picked up Death Race and I hadn't played Death Race in probably over a decade and I went right through it. And I think I did it in like eight minutes or some shit.
Yeah, you killed it.
Very impressive.
And that was after like the whole first minute of just wasting time trying to remember how to do Death Race.
Yeah.
You know what we
forgot how to double, I forgot that you need to double tap the triggers to slide your car over and attack people.
Yeah.
So for the whole, and I forgot the spin move for like the first 4 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what we didn't mention was Sonic for Wii U.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even see this Sonic
Racing Transformed.
Yeah, that's an easy It's an easy game to jump into, and it's an easy game to kind of show off that Wii U has a really great racing game already, you know?
Yeah.
And it was nice because I only have 2 Wii remotes. Mm-hmm. I think I gave one of my Motion Pluses away to my parents, because they got Resort.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have a Pro. But I have the Pro, right. So I have the Pro, so we're able to use that as a third controller, and then the gamepad as a fourth. So we could play 4 players on Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing, even though, I only had 2 remotes.
Mm-hmm.
And, we played that for probably at least an hour.
Right. Yeah, it was fun. Like.
We played a lot of different tracks.
At certain points in that game, it really clicks. Like, when the transitions work really well between going... It's pretty much Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah,
except you're changing in the middle of the race.
And Diddy Kong Racing was always my favorite Mario Kart.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wait, really?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
I don't think it ages too well.
I don't like it that
the
much.
The boat controls are pretty awful.
I could see that, but I always wanted another Diddy Kong Racing.
I bought Diddy Kong Racing a few months ago.
Oh, yeah?
Because I have an N64 now.
There's a DS version that's supposed to be pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Rare made it, actually. It's one of the last DS games that Rare made.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, and I just always felt like,
Has Rare been making lately?
Not much.
Yeah, nothing.
They're going to show a long lost Rare franchise on Xbox One.
Rock and Roll Racing!
Conker?
That's Blizzard.
That's right, that is Blizzard.
It's probably going to be Conker or Battletoads, or I don't know. I mean,
Conker could be really cool.
Does Nintendo still hold the license for Killer Instinct?
I think Microsoft did get Killer Instinct. Okay.
They have the Conker license because they redid Conker for Xbox.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Conker would be great because then you could have furry characters and show how great the graphics look.
I honestly think it'll be a new Banjo game.
But that's not long lost though. They made
Nuts and Bolts a couple years ago.
And that doesn't appeal to the Xbox.
Nuts and Bolts was about 5 years ago.
So but it's not long lost.
It's the last generation.
And it's not really a
last generation. Yeah.
Banjo 3.
3E.
Yeah.
Pedro 3E.
Yeah. E3. So, let's see here. What else did we have? Oh, I played a couple games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I played a little Bio Miracle Bokuto Uppa last night.
Oh my god.
That seemed to really, throw people for a loop.
Fucking weird game.
Oh, is that the one where you're crawling through cake?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the baby.
You play as the super baby, and sometimes when you get a, what was it, a bottle, or you would get a power up.
Star or something.
It would make
it
you.
It was a bottle of codeine.
Okay.
Scissor.
Yeah, scissor up. It makes the baby, instead of crawl, it makes the baby stand up on two legs and then become invincible and you run around really fast.
Was the animation that his arms were going like this? Because it looked like he had six pairs of limbs. It was really throwing me off. He looked like a spider baby.
Yeah.
Spider baby.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
That was the import title.
And then I got to the level where you just crawl in all four directions because you're, it's like Dig Dug. Yeah. You're just kind of digging through all this cake.
By eating it.
Yeah. Presumably.
That's a trippy game. That's an import game on Virtual Console. It was never released here, but it's a technically very impressive NES game. It's a lot of fun to play. It's pretty challenging 2D platformer.
Sure, but it's no Choaniki. I knew where you were going with that one.
It's not nearly as challenging as Choaniki. That's true.
Well, not nearly as Choaniki as Choaniki.
Well, speaking of really impressive games on NES. Was it Euphoria? Euphoria. Cool. So I blame the title, but the game itself was actually really, really impressive. I actually want to play more of it. That's definitely something I want to return to.
It can be yours for $6 when you get home, Carl.
Indeed, it can. Well,
it's a great value. It's a long game. It's really fun and it's challenging, but super interesting. And if you get, frustrated, you can always try going a different path because it's so non-linear. It's this Metroid-style 2D platformer that's cartoony.
The basic concept of it is you're this little dude who's out to find all of his friends, and once you've found his friends, you play them as a boss, and once you've defeated them, you can use that character and their special abilities to traverse the same landscape.
Yeah.
So what's really cool about it is like you end up, very early on, you beat this little dinosaur dude, and you beat him, but he's able to traverse water, and so that opens up new areas of a level that you were already in.
Right.
So that's definitely pretty cool.
And you also get, later in the game, you can also sometimes get upgrades for them. They get new abilities.
Yeah. Cool.
And so you can do even more of them. So I think the dino dude ends up becoming super useful because he's the one that can crawl up walls. He can kind of stick to walls and crawl up them. So that lets you get to all kinds of places you couldn't do before.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That's from Sunsoft. Really, really cool.
Yeah, and then that made me think of Blaster Master Overdrive. So I showed you guys a little bit of that.
Ass Blaster.
And Blaster Master Overdrive is a game that I think most people still don't even know exists. It's like, wait, there's another Blaster Master? Mm. And, oh, by the way, it's really good.
Yeah.
Watching you play that was pretty rad because you knew what you were doing.
Well, I jumped to my save file at the end of the game and I had all the powers and I was showing you guys all the cool
like
shit.
Like cycling through the grappling hook and then like boosters and then putting the drill on and fucking people up. That was cool.
It fucking people up.
Yeah.
Like the game has hover jets and a grappling hook and vehicular platforming. So it's like everything I love in a 2D game, all in one thing. And it's a flawed game and it really desperately needs classic controller support, which it's never going to get.
Well, yeah, you were saying just using the D-pad is really annoying with the move.
Oh, it's fine.
Shooting when you're on your feet.
Right. It's fine. The D-pad works great when you're in the tank, but when you get in the overhead sections, it gets pretty hard to control.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to strafe, you have to hold down the B trigger like with your knuckle because you're holding the controller NES style. It's very poorly considered control scheme, but
what if it was like Smash TV controls when you're on your feet,
that would be a lot better with if you had two joysticks.
It's like Geometry Wars, I guess.
So
is there a name for that?
Twin stick shooter.
Okay. Which is basically what Blaster Master is.
Yeah. With no sticks, with a D-pad and
that's annoying.
Well, the original Blaster Master was a four-way overhead. You can move and shoot in four directions, and this one's eight. But you're still playing with a D-pad.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't.
That was actually one of the. What was the one game I played that wasn't the Blastman? Or Pulseman. The other one that I played. That was a problem I had with the controls.
Oh, Cybertron,
Yeah, your aiming is your movement. So as you're moving and trying to aim up, you kind of like stop and then have to aim. And that was really annoying.
Yeah.
Wasn't Super Metroid like that too?
No, Super Metroid, you have shoulder buttons. You can remap it, but yeah.
You can use the shoulder buttons to angle 45 degrees up or down.
Right.
I got you.
Very handy.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of 2D games that contain everything you love in a game, my recommendation would have to be Noki Rockenbop, whatever the fuck that was called.
Nicky Rockenball.
Yeah, Nicky Rockenball. That was an amazing game.
Well, that's a new game, right?
You want to spend all the money you have on that game. Trust me on this.
I think it's only $5, but it's probably not
worth... That's all the money I have.
It's probably not worth $5.
It's not worth 50 cents.
That's a WiiWare game, and yeah. I don't know why I thought I should buy that back in the day, but it's not very good.
Well, you're also playing some art style game that seemed very strange.
Oh, yeah, I was playing Rotozoa.
Yeah.
Rotozoa was pretty cool.
Rotozoa was like a game I played a lot for a week when it came out and then never touched it again, you know?
I think that's how a lot of the art style games are.
Yeah.
What about the Super Trippy Racing game?
Trippy Racing game, which one?
When were you hooking?
Oh, yeah, that's
a PlayStation game.
That's outside of the scope of this conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. I thought that was on the Wii.
Dyad is awesome.
Yeah,
for sure.
I was thinking that's very much the case that I had with Orbeant,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a very, very cool game.
I love Orbeant.
Very fun, but I think once you kind of get over the concept, it kind of loses a little bit of its luster. Mm.
I can see that. I mean, Orbeant is very high concept, and it's very chill and mellow.
Yeah.
Like, it's very relaxing to play.
Mm-hmm. It's like it's very low penalty for losing. It's very easy to just get right back to where you were, and it's just something you can kind of just throw on and play while you're listening to something. Or just
totally.
Take it out. Yeah.
Sort of like Flower or other ones.
It's definitely more of a game than Flower.
Well, yeah, those aren't even games. Those are just experiences.
I disagree. I think Flower's a game.
No, but I mean, you know, it's non-punitive.
Really? What's the goal?
Really. Yeah, yeah.
What's the goal of Flower?
To get to the end of all the levels.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And well, that, or flow, at least. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah. It's hardly Electroplankton.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Electroplankton is like a playground, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it has goals and objectives and, Orbeant is great. So Rotozoa is a game where it's kind of this 2D thing. You're all underwater and you just move anywhere you want and you have this sort of, you know, multicellular organism, but you can spin it and it has these flagella coming off of it. And as you start with, I think just one or two like flagella, and then later on you get up to five or six.
Mm. That looked kind of hard.
It's challenge. Well, I jumped to like the hardest mode because I just thought it would be more interesting. I was afraid if I started at the beginning.
Because when stuff starts, really boring. I mean, so what is it? You have to kind of, when things hit you, you want to make sure you have the right color to absorb them.
Right.
Right.
Each and flagella if they don't, you lose color. Pieces of you.
Right. So it's what makes it fun is that you don't have perfect control over the character. So
that sounds off.
Well, no, but you have to kind of learn to work within it. So you're in some kind of fluid medium, right?
So you can push it, but you can't really stop it.
Right. So there's momentum, and it's like as you move, so you can spin independently of your movement. And spinning, you can line it up and make sure the right color is pointed at the little creature that's coming towards you. But also, as you move around left and right, up and down, it flings, you know, so there's momentum in the fluid and it flings your appendages in the opposite direction that you move. Okay. And so as you try to move away from guys, all of a sudden your arms are all just kind of shoot off in that direction.
Yeah. Towards him, yeah.
And you can also rotate as you do that and maybe try to set things up. But it gets very tricky when there's a lot of stuff on the screen. Like, it reminded me that one of my problems with Rotozoa is that when you first start the game, it's just super slow and easy and just boring.
And then it ramps up too quick?
Well, it's not that, but like you kind of get to this happy medium about halfway through the game where it's challenging and it's fun and it's interesting, but it's still satisfying. You can just still do it. And then you get beyond that and it just gets obscenely difficult, you know, and it's just kind of overwhelming at a point. But there's a chunk in the middle where it's really great.
Yeah.
And it's a very chill kind of, you know, like a lot of the art style games, it's a lot of fun to just kind of relax with.
Yeah. You get that one superpower per turn.
Yeah, you can spin up and turn into super mode.
Right.
Which is pretty handy.
Yeah.
And also really cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it changes all the colors and the art and everything.
So were there any other games that... Oh, Mike, did you want to talk about Splatterhouse?
Yeah, I played... Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of side-scrolling beat-em-ups that I played.
Splatterhouse.
I played Splatterhouse on TurboGrafx-16.
And Magician Lord.
And Magician Lord on Neo Geo, yeah.
Magician Lord was badass.
I liked Magician Lord.
I actually really liked Magician Lord.
It's kind of a dickhead.
Even though it kind of screwed you a couple times?
The thing that I always remember about Magician Lord is when, you know, when the Wii got Neo Geo as a virtual console, you know, itself.
Platform, yeah.
Yeah, everyone was like, oh, Magician Lord, gotta get it.
That's the one.
That's the game. Yeah.
It's like the one good Neo Geo game or whatnot. Yeah.
The one that isn't just, you know,
Metal Slug.
Or King of Fighters, you know, years 93 through 94. Or 93 through 98 or whatever. So Magician Lord, but it's okay.
I like the concept of like being able to change into a totally different dude halfway through the level.
Right.
And they have a totally different power.
Well, it's like Altered Beast.
Yeah, it's very Altered Beast, but I liked it. Altered Beast is such a pile of shit. At least Magician Lord is like semi-fun.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that it just puts you in these like
cheap deaths.
Practically like no-win scenarios constantly.
It's brutal.
It's really hard.
That's what I had a problem with. I like the concept of it a lot.
Yeah.
But
It's like as you're playing through, all of a sudden, just these fireballs will start just appearing from off screen, and they just fly at
and
you.
It was inconsistent. No,
and then you go down a ladder to get away from the fireballs, and right when you land, you're facing this like
yeah, whatever direction, whatever direction you're facing when you get on a ladder, that's the direction you're facing when you get off. So there's one part where I get you walk to the left, and then you go down a ladder, and then immediately to your right, there's like eight dudes that you have to beat up. But when you get down the ladder, you're probably facing left, and you're probably going to get your shit wrecked.
And you get stunned.
And you get stunned, and then you get stuck in between them all.
Yeah.
So you have to know, like, the next time I went down there, I walked past the ladder, turned around, and approached it from facing right. When I got down, I was able to fight those guys.
Well, it's also one of those games where you can get upgrades and power-ups as you play through the level, but every time you get hit, you lose
them.
And so it feels like you can get into this mode where you have a lot of power-ups, and they're making the game easy for you, and you're just plowing through everybody. But then one thing goes wrong.
Cheap shot.
And like some shot just comes in from off the screen in this crazy bullet storm bullet hell pattern that you can't get between, and you take a hit and now you're weaker, and then you get another hit and you're weaker, and all of a sudden just the house of cards falls down.
Yeah.
And now you're so weak that you just can't even play through the level anymore.
That's
just from one mistake, it's just this domino chain of calamity.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the experience I had when I was when I first
Well, you know, it's an arcade game. It's supposed to beat you up, so you put another quarter in.
Yep.
Yeah, but I'm not playing an arcade.
Now, what you're saying then is Magician Lord did not make you feel like you were a magician lord.
No.
He was a magician lady.
And then the other game I played was Splatterhouse on TurboGrafx-16, which I know it's kind of got a reputation, I guess. Wasn't it one of those games that like they brought up in all the congressional hearings resulted in the ESRB?
It was for the time, like for the, you know, probably 89 or 90 when that game came out, it was very graphic, you know. And there's just
pretty graphic.
It's a bunch of gross shit on the screen.
But it's hilarious.
It's bad
now
shit.
It's just like goofy. Now it's just like puddles of green sprites.
Yeah. It reminded me even more of Altered Beast in the way it looks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, you walk through a level, you are a dude who looks kind of like Jason.
Yeah.
Because he's got like a hockey mask on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, I guess kind of like maybe like Bane, I guess.
Bane
and
Jason.
You walk across the screen and you beat up monsters as they approach you, and occasionally you can pick up a 2x4 and use that to beat people up. When you kill the enemies, like some of them, like there's these ones that like hang down from the ceiling, and when you hit them, their like guts spill open, and it's pretty.
The animations are really,
really
cool.
Good for, especially for TurboGrafx.
I like
shit,
the animations a lot.
The game is hard as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as it seems that all those games are.
It's really slow and deliberately paced, and you don't feel like you have very good control.
You don't have good control. You don't have good reaction time is what it is. Like, sometimes the monsters will come at you, like, super quick. Like, there's these, like, worm things that jump towards you, and they come at you super quick, and you're, like, a big hulking dude, and your range of motion is not good.
But I'll tell you, if we were all 7 years old, we would think that game was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
We would.
Splatterhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, the title screen, like, the title font is, like, written in blood.
Yeah.
And it's just...
At the time that game came out, there was nothing like it, really. You know, this was like a pre-rated M, but this would have been rated M at the time. And there's just nobody made video games.
That game
like
would get like a teen rating.
The SNES
rating
hadn't been out, the Genesis hadn't been out yet.
Right.
You know, so it was like, wow, souped up 8-bit.
Yeah.
You know, though, that point about if we were 7, I think it was awesome.
Yeah.
But that's because when I was 7, I didn't know bad games were a thing.
Right. Yeah.
What?
You know, like, I would just go to the store, and if it had a cool cover, and I read the back a little bit, I'd be like,
Well, that's the thing. When you were 7, the coolness of the graphics and the setting
overpowered all the weird things in the game. I would just be like, oh, I'm not playing
it
well enough.
Exactly. You would bear through the bad gameplay and the bad control.
Well, especially because, you know, you'd be the only game you had for months, maybe.
Yeah, you would want to see the next crazy boss that, you know,
that's why people bought the bouncer.
I died at you go through a level, you go through like two screens of side scrolling, and then you end up like usually locked in a room, and then you have to do something in that room. Like the first time it's all these like, kind of like leech snake monsters jumping out at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time it's just like a haunted room where like I had to beat up a chair. Fuck that chair up.
Then
this tiny little knife comes after me, and it's such a shitty fucking small target.
Yeah.
And if you miss it by a fraction, guess what? You just got stabbed.
Yeah.
So the chair was easy because it was like bigger than me practically.
Yeah. Chairs are way easier to kill than knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were fighting a chair.
That's the moral of Splatterhouse.
Stay away from chairs.
And then I died and I said, fuck this game.
No, stay away from knives.
What's that?
Get out of your chair.
Right, well, I'm going to sit up in this chair, man.
Sit down.
Stand
on this
up
chair.
And then sit on this chair.
Warm it up.
Chris.
Yeah.
Were there any other games we played?
I think that covers
the
big hitters.
The
I mean,
we are at the 1 hour mark.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
So I think this concludes our retroactive virtual console raid.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of WiiWare stuff, too, I guess.
Sure.
But
It's all on the same SD card channel. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun for me, actually. It's like this is the perfect group of people to get together and just, you know, like you're vaguely aware of at least most of these games. It's oh, you know, I've heard of that. I've never played it. Or, wow, I've played this when I was a kid. I want to, you know, try this again and see if it holds up or whatever. It's just, I have a good smorgasbord, so I thought it would be fun. And, you know, we could do that with my disc games. It would be a lot more hassle to change them out and turn on different systems and stuff. Like, that's kind of the one of the great things about Virtual Console. Yeah. It's all this weird stuff that's all just in one, it's in one pool, and you just go around and click on whatever you want.
Yeah. And if you're sick after 20 seconds, you just click on something else.
Exactly. So even with going through the rigmarole of going to Wii menu and then back to the SD card channel, waiting for that to load up, it's still pretty fast to jump from one from one game to the next.
It's a white person complaint. You know what I mean? It's
like, I have to go back to the menu and hit the card again and waste 10 seconds.
Yeah, but it's pretty quick to just hand off, and I really enjoyed that. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, so I appreciate you guys being up for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was awesome.
Worked out well for this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is going to end right now. So, well, thanks everyone for listening, and thanks to these guys. This was great.
Thank you, Johnny.
It was great to get John on for the first time. Awesome to get, you know, Mike's our co-creator of this podcast. We don't have him on often enough. And
Carl and Stan are old veterans.
Yeah. Nintendo Pirate Radio rides again.
Especially to have you guys here in person sitting at my kitchen table doing this. Right. It's been a lot of fun. And of course, you can hear Mike on,
Connectivity.
NWR Connectivity, which I also just did a bonus segment about us, about rockets with Scott.
Yes.
So those are always interesting. I love those.
Pretty much Space Q&A 3.
Yeah.
But there are no questions.
There was, because he wrote a quiz.
Oh, that's right. Well,
my questions to you.
Oh, okay.
And
slam.
And your answers. So that's on Connectivity right now, and then in a few days we'll put it up on Crosstalk as well as a standalone episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott's very gracious to let us do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course this weekend we're recording a lot of stuff. We've already done a Rough Draft, which is our beer podcast that we did at a microbrewery right here, a brew pub right here in town, and, We did Bob last night. We did Box Office Poison. So we
doing another Rough Draft today.
Yeah, we went to the Alamo Draft House, saw Fast and Furious 6.
We're not fully proud of that one.
We talked about Star Trek and Iron Man 3, and then also my movie of the month, which is a Werner Herzog movie, Bad Lieutenant.
Port of Call, New Orleans.
If you want to find out what happens, you better listen to
Lieutenant
that podcast.
Lieutenant Colin, Port of Call, Colin, New Orleans.
I'm just going to say, I think people should listen to that show. It's
definitely
pretty crazy.
Yeah. And watch that movie.
So all that's over at crosstalk.com. And
it is.
You know, if you like hearing these guys talk, then you will hear lots more of that over at Crosstalk. And they also host my show, Discover Music Project, and we're going to have a new one of those pretty soon, too. So,
excellent.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, we'll be back next week with the normal RFN crew, and we will be getting ready for E3. We'll probably have some predictions and, you know, more newer games to talk about and, you know, listener mail and all that good stuff. So I hope you will look forward to that. And again, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We left the taps running for a